Dr. Jim Bertel coming to you live from my home here in Maumelle, Arkansas. And this is Monday morning, and we're privileged to have Pastor Mike Smith from Country Bible Church in Brenham, Texas, on with us again this morning as we discuss his book in progress entitled Tolerating Tyranny. And we're doing this one chapter at a time, and we're almost out of chapter one, Mike. But welcome back to the Dr. Jim Talk Show.
Well, good morning to you, Dr. Jim. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, sir. And Mike, every time we get together, I always start out with the same thing, not just a welcome, but I ask you to give us your website and your email address. And the reason I ask that each time we get together, someone might say, well, you do this every time. Well, the reason we do that is because as these recordings go up onto iTunes, someone might hit meeting number 7 and didn't get number 1. And so what I want them to do is when they log on and they download one of these interviews, they'll at least know how to get in touch with you if they haven't heard anything else. So give us your website and also an email address, Mike.
Okay, our website is countrybiblechurch.us, and my email address is mike44gv, as in greenvine, at gmail.com.
Excellent. Mike, we've been discussing your book again, your book that's in progress called Tolerating Tyranny, and we're doing that one chapter at a time. We're still in chapter one, so let me go back and ask at this point in time that subtopic that you have called Regarding Taxes. What was it like 100 years ago? So if you want to scroll down in your notes to that area, why don't you just list, you've got about 7 things there, list them for us, and then let's talk about each one of those, okay? So first of all, regarding taxes, what was it like 100 years ago in the United States?
Well, it was quite different, but before we go there,
sure.
I want to address one thing that we talked about last time, if that'd be okay.
Absolutely. This is your program.
Okay. We were talking about Dr. Ramsey's oration.
Yes, sir.
And what the United States was like. I think it was about 10-20 years after we won our independence.
Yes.
And one of the things that he mentioned, and I'll quote it to you, he said, "It is one of the peculiar privileges we enjoy in consequence of independence that no individual, no party interest, and no foreign influence can plunge us into war."
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked about that some. It's so important that we go by the Constitution, because
mm-hmm.
when we don't, then you can hardly distinguish us from any other country that
mm-hmm.
is essentially under tyranny. But what I wanted to point out is that I've known for a long time, anyone can know that we're not operating under the Constitution, especially that particular principle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important. This was one particular one, because it means that not one person, like in the ancient times when the king could just on a whim take his whole country to war, and the suffering and all of the killing and maiming and all that can just be by one person's decision. Well, the writers of the Constitution, our founding fathers, knew and had experienced that, and so that's why they put the prohibition of that by declaring in Article 1, Section 8. Of the Constitution, that only the Congress is to declare war, and that means that without a declaration
mm-hmm.
of war, from the Congress, the President can't just on his own desire or his administration take us into war. And since World War II, we have not had a declaration of war, even though we've gone
mm-hmm.
to war in Vietnam, the Gulf War, the Iraq War, Iraqi War, the war in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been untold numbers of people who have suffered, and so many have died without a declaration of war. And I knew that the reason that the Congress would acquiesce, they would give in and cave in and not demand that there be a declaration of war from them, and this is just my opinion, but I think it's right, is because they don't want the responsibility if a war goes sour. They don't want to be responsible for it and the people be angry with them. And so if they just allow the president excuse me, to take us to war, then they don't have to really show the responsibility that is truly theirs according to the Constitution. But I never knew the mechanics of how they get by with that. And I was reading an article just, in fact, it was last night, excuse me, from the New American Magazine. It's on the last page by John McManus. And I found something that I wanted to share because it helped me understand why we're able to get by with that today, if you'd allow me to read just a couple of lines here.
You do it, friend. Again, this is your program.
Okay. Well, what it all had to do with was when we entered into the United Nations on July the 28th, 1945, which was a disaster. And the United Nations Charter, Article 25, says that the members of the United Nations agree to accept and carry out the decisions of the Security Council in accordance with the present charter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to linger too long here, but this was a disaster. What this really did was undo our sovereignty as a nation. Mm-hmm. In other words, we, the members, since we became a member of the United Nations, not only that, but of course it's located in New York,
mm-hmm.
that we have to accept the decisions of the Security Council. And what does that do to the sovereignty of our nation?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, but that's bad enough. But then here's where that was in July. Then in December of that same month, that same year,
mm-hmm.
1945,
mm-hmm.
the United Nations decided to come up with what is known as the United Nations Participation Act. This was that same year.
Mm-hmm.
And the United Nations Participation Act, in Section 6, says the president shall not be deemed to...
That's all right.
I'm out in trouble with my throat this morning.
That's okay.
The United Nations Participation Act, in Section 6, says the president shall not be deemed to require the authorization of Congress to send American forces to carry out the decisions of the United Nations Security Council.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. That's how they get by without going to Congress and getting a declaration of war before we go to any nation. According to this, where we are members of the United Nations, we have to essentially abide by the decisions of the Security Council. And then when they came up with this United Nations Participation Act, it specifically says that the President does not have to get authorization from Congress to send our forces into war,
mm-hmm.
but they have to abide by the decisions of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, Mike, let me ask you to do this, because you're right on target. This is exactly right. And Mike, one of the concerns that I have is in what I call this low information crowd that's out here today, where we're faced with revisionist history that these kids are learning in the schools, in the college, etc. Can you take what you have just said and link that to the purpose of human history in terms of resolving the angelic conflict? Because I guess I'm on a bandwagon, or I'm on a what's the term that we use when it sounds like I'm a broken record, because I'm trying to help people to understand that it's not just the fact that the United Nations in the United States, it's not just the fact that we have We have submitted this kind of thing. This is actually, unless we see this in the light of the angelic conflict and its resolution, freedom being the most fundamental principle, it seems to me so that the majority of people would look at me and say, you know, you're nitpicking about all this. No, listen, we're talking about human history and why we're on this planet to begin with. Can you relate that or amplify that in any way?
Well, I'm just amazed that the people at large who have their sons and now their daughters going off to these wars, that they don't understand that it's no longer in defense of this country. That's what our military is for. It's not to go around the world to try to be the policeman of the world, to keep peace in the world, for nation building, to secure other countries' borders. It's for any of that. It's for the defense of our country. And I know that there are those who can say, well, when we go over there in those war over there and fight on their shores, that means we don't have to fight on ours. But I happen to agree with Ron Paul that when we're over there in all these Arab countries now, and we are, of course, we were uninvited, and the people resent it, and I think it puts us in a more dangerous position in worldwide than it would if we just stayed at home, mind our own business, and were protecting our own borders. And people, this is the thing that motivated me to write this book, is that people today don't think like free people. They have been trained, they've been schooled from what I would call a revisionist history. Just this one point that I made this morning, what is so disconcerting is if this was on the news and you had someone that was much more articulate than I am to explain this to where the people understood, this is why we're going to wars on the whim of a president or by his administration, and you would think the people would be up in arms and realize that, that we have been we have had people who betrayed us and betrayed our nation to get involved in the United Nations and turn over the things of the Constitution that are essentially sacred with regarding freedom, and they've turned it over. What is so disconcerting is that just what you said a moment ago. Well, you know, so what? I mean, like it doesn't matter.
Yes.
And there's something that I was going to read in the section that came at the end of Dr. Ramsey's oration. And I think it would be fitting to read it. It's just one sentence, but it's pretty long. But let me read that to explain at least my feelings of the indifference and the apathy that people have regarding freedom and the state of affairs today. When one thinks of all the people who have given their lives to secure our freedom, from the founding of our country till now, and all the sacrifices that have been made by so many for the cause of liberty, and then to see it all being squandered by relatively few exceedingly evil people for their own personal gain, should create within us an anger, a righteous indignation strong enough to destroy any apathy or indifference in our hearts, so that we will secure freedom once again in this land. That's what I think should happen if people were enlightened, if they just would step out of their daily routine and the details of life and all of the trivia that they're we are constantly being distracted by, and understand the importance of freedom, because it's slipping away.
Well, Mike, this is one of the reasons why, among other things, I sort of labor this idea of man on this planet to resolve the angelic conflict, and talking about what I refer to as the old man, new man. That's Paul's language in the King James Version. But when you realize that we're born with needs, born. We're born. We're not created. But we're born in the likeness of fallen Adam. And with the needs that we have, we're trying to solve our problems. We're trying to fulfill our needs through worldly or human viewpoint kinds of solutions. And it really won't work. And in this five-generation slide that I talk about, going from about 1900, because I believe that when Lewis Berry Shaver and Schofield and John Darby, when they refound this principle of dispensationalism, I think within the next generation, people began to slide away from that concept, and that's the only way we're going to really interpret the Word of God correctly for people today. And when I look at in that five generation slide, by the time you get to the third generation, would be about my generation. We've slidden so far away from the absolute truths of God's Word that when I grew up remembering the freedoms that we had. I remember the Second World War. I know where I was the night that the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And I, at that point in time, I was only 7 years old. But I remember that night, my grandmother coming to me. Well, by the time you get to my children and my grandchildren in the fifth generation away from all this, listen, these kids grew up with Social Security. They grew up with the income tax. They grew up with Medicare and Medicaid. And so this is sort of like, this is the world they live in. And because the Black Road Regiment is no longer on the scene today, there isn't anybody out here except people like you and perhaps me and a few others that are trying to bring people back to all this. And it's like, you know, it's like whistling against the wind. It's like throwing something up against the wall and seeing it slide down. There seems to be no appetite for what you and I have to be saying.
Well, it's a shock to people to actually hear the truth.
Absolutely.
Because it's foreign to them. And even to stand up for your rights and to see yourself as a sovereign individual that is responsible to God above all others is, they just, like I said earlier, have that slave mentality. I didn't say that, but that's what I meant. They have
absolutely
a slave mentality. I'll do what I'm told, and whatever you do, don't make waves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're so right. It's the pulpits that have shouldered so much of the responsibility. They just dabble in the Word, and they're very careful not to step on anybody's toes and don't go into any areas that are controversial. The Bible calls that tickling ears, and that's pervasive. Even in this country, which is a country that, above all other countries, they're supposed to have the freedom to be able to express their religion to the First Amendment. And everything, it seems like, in the Bill of Rights is under attack today. And the people, the Christians, are asleep at the wheel because they think, well, this is what we have to put up with.
Yeah.
And a lot of it comes from a misunderstanding of Romans 13.
Mm-hmm.
So there's very few pastors that have a correct understanding of Romans 13, and they think that we, in Romans 13, it tells us that we are to submit to government. That's the first verse.
Mm-hmm.
However, they don't put it in the context.
Mm-hmm.
They don't explain that what's given in Romans 13 is the way that God has designed the government to function, and when the government is functioning correctly, we, as a minister of God, listen to that, a minister of God, for good, then we are obliged to submit to it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even address there, well, what do you do when the government is no longer a minister of God, but essentially has become a minister of Satan for evil? And they take what is given in Romans 13:1 and try to apply it to a government like we have today, and it doesn't fit. That's not what it's about.
Well, let me ask you a question
there's
about
no
that.
One, there's no pastors that are giving that discernment. Mm-hmm. And so people think, well, Romans 13, you know, got to submit, whatever it is. And they don't think it through. And I address that in very much detail so that people will get that right. right on the
thing. Let me ask you a question about that, because I've been toying this idea for about 2 weeks and haven't said anything to you about that. It seems to me as though that what we're doing now in chapter 1, chapter 2, leading up to that Romans 13 passage where you exegeted that, that it looks to me like maybe what we ought to do is to go to Romans 13 next week. Now, this is just a suggestion, and then you decide whether you want to do this or not, because really, this is your program. I've got you on here to talk about your book, and maybe me ask questions. I'm not here to really straighten anything out. What I'd like to do is ask you to consider the possibility of let's go to Romans 13 next week if you would like to, and explain that chapter in your book to our listening audience, and that's the way. What they're going to do is they're going to get the way it ought to be. Then let's come back and pick up with this right where we are, where we leave off today, and say, this is what's wrong. Here's what we should be doing. Here's the way we should be thinking. But let's show you what's wrong in the tolerating of the tyranny right now. Does that even make any sense to you? Or?
Well, no, I'm fine with that. The reason that I have it structured the way it is because... Mm-hmm. I'm making the case for people who think, we're not perfect, but we're the greatest nation on earth,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
we're the land of the free and the home of the brave,
mm-hmm.
and they don't realize the degree that we have slipped and how dangerous it
yes.
is that we just plunged completely into tyranny and degeneracy. It can happen overnight. I think we talked the other day about the executive orders.
Yes.
And all of these things are in place, and there can just be a spark, some kind of something, disaster, something that happens.
Yeah.
And overnight, all these executive orders can go into
Absolutely.
Place. They can be. They can start coming to fruition. And when they do, we won't even recognize this,
mm-hmm.
this country anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
Or even us, like yourself, you and myself, we can recognize that things have drastically changed from what we have remembered.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what I was trying to do is for those who are into denial,
mm-hmm.
is to show, look at what Dr. Ramsey is describing, and look at what we have today. I was trying to make a case in the book for them to understand. You know, he's right there. When you see what we used to have and what we have today, there's something dreadfully wrong. The Constitution hasn't changed. It's the people who have changed, and over time, incrementally, a little bit at a time. One, it's like dying a death of a thousand cuts. It's
mm-hmm,
just
mm-hmm.
eventually you bleed to death, and that's what I see happening now. But that's fine with me.
Yeah.
We can go to Romans 13, because I think probably most of our listeners are Christians, and that is what we go by, is, of course, the Bible. And in the Bible, Romans 13, verses 1 through 7, are the definitive answer to what is the relationship between the government and Christians. And so if you want to do that, be fine with me.
And Mike, I'm not even suggesting that the order in which you've written this is wrong. It's exactly right. It's what you want and what you feel like you should have done. But it was just a thought of mine that because you've mentioned on a couple of occasions in some of the other programs Romans 13 and the distortion of that today. As a matter of fact, Mike, it's probably been 30 years ago. The man under whose ministry I was saved on the island of Trinidad, Chaplain John T. Goad. After I got out of the Navy, and he was out of the Navy, and he was pastoring in St. Mary's, Georgia, First Baptist Church there. And we had gone out for a walk on a particular day. I was down at a preacher revival, and we went out for a walk. And he made mention of the fact that every 200 years, it was his understanding, it was his thought that we ought to have a revolution. And it was just about that time when things were going downhill in our country. He said, ain't about time for it. And he was very serious about that. We need another revolution. And he began to talk about Romans 13 and said, John, you're seeing it wrong. Because he, too, was under the impression that what that was teaching us, that right, wrong, or otherwise, we had to submit to our government. And I explained what you're talking about in your book to him, and it changed his mind right there on the spot. Yeah.
Really? When did this happen?
Well, say that again?
I said, when did this take place?
You mean what I just said?
Yeah.
Probably, it's been about, let's see, it would have been about 1970... Somewhere between, probably between 1975 and 1980, somewhere back in that period of time.
And you said you talked to him and gave these principles and he changed his mind?
Yes, absolutely. He sure did.
Well, that's the power of just getting correct information.
Oh, absolutely.
Having the knowledge that, and that's what people don't have. They don't have the knowledge. They have this. You know, once you start thinking like an old man, mm-hmm. you know, like the old man and the new man.
Sure, absolutely.
In the spiritual sense, that's true. Mm-hmm. And it's also true just in your everyday lives. As you go through a routine day by day,
mm-hmm.
and we're an accumulation of what we have learned and the influences that in our lives,
mm-hmm.
and it's people think a particular way, and it's difficult for some to change that idea, and what they need is is truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people aren't getting.
You know, I think you're really too kind when you say some of them aren't getting it. I think the truth of the matter is, brother, the majority are not getting it, Mike. And when you talk about these things that we have learned, see, what happens is, you and I know that Paul teaches that if we're going to understand the Christian way of life, it's a spiritual way of life. It's not religion. It's not man by man, by man's efforts trying to please God. It is us getting in on his plan. And if the Spirit of God isn't involved in this, we are religious and we're not spiritual. So I think what happens when we take a look at the majority of people today, including Christians, who are functioning from the source of the old man, who they're functioning under the influence of their old sin nature. They have habituated old man responses reactions to their life situations. And until they hear the truth, there's no way that they're going to change. They've got to get the truth. Absolutely correct, man.
The truth is hard to take sometimes, especially when it's ugly. Especially.
Yeah.
When it concerns a country that you've always had allegiance to,
mm-hmm.
early on in the book I write that there comes a point in time when a person has to be willing to accept the truth, get out of that mode of denial, and recognize that when a country goes so far to the dark side that it no longer deserves your allegiance. It no longer deserves even your submission, because if you do, then you're participating in the darkness yourself, and that's hard for people to do. They just the denial factor is always there when people have to face the truth, and it's not just that's in maybe sin in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
They want to deny it. They don't want to acknowledge the truth of it, and it's the same thing with your allegiance to a country. But you have to be willing to accept the truth, have an open mind, at least give it a fair hearing, mm-hmm. or else you'll live in denial. And those who say, "Well, we're the greatest nation there ever was,"
mm-hmm.
well, maybe that was true at one time, but is that true today? Let's at least look at the facts to see if that's the case. And if we're not the greatest nation on earth, if we have slipped so far
mm-hmm.
that we're dangerously close to losing our freedom altogether,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then what does the Bible have to say about that? What the questions have to be. You can't even answer You can't face the truth unless you ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the questions that I ask in the book is, and they're that makes a person uncomfortable, but they have to be addressed.
Absolutely.
What is the relationship between a Christian and their government?
Mm-hmm.
Are we to submit unconditionally, no matter how evil or how unconstitutional a government becomes?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What does the Bible have to say about that? And I would think that Christians would be interested in that, but time will tell if they are or not.
No, let's go ahead. Go ahead.
So do you want to, for right now, the rest of this program, we can go to where you were going with the taxes? Do you want to go there?
Yeah, we can go in that direction. And I was going to make one other comment, Mike, maybe two comments. One is the man in the pew is going to have a hard time finding the truth if it's not coming from the pulpit. Secondly, I think that in terms of maybe people understanding or being willing to accept the truth, which is hard, as you've indicated, especially if they have a trend toward asceticism. People with a trend toward asceticism have a hard time saying no to anything, and especially the government. And Frederick Bastiat makes the point that people have a tendency to believe, and we might ask why, but people have a tendency to believe that because the government said it, and because there are government rules and regulations and legislation, that makes it right.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head right there, and they think that you're not even to question it.
Absolutely.
And they think that because, again, the center of this in the Bible with
mm-hmm.
the relationship between a Christian and the government is Romans chapter 13.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there are very, very few pastors that address that to any detail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They just say, oh, well, the government, God made government and tells us to obey it, and that's it. And that has done more damage than anything. Most mm-hmm. pastors don't even go there. They don't even address
absolutely.
It. But the ones that do, don't get it right.
You know, that's another interesting point, and I'd like to ask you this question, and, you know, just feel comfortable to answer it in whatever way you want to, but in your periphery, in other words, the people that you know, the pastors that you know across this country, all swans are white again until you see a black one, and there may be more outside of our periphery that we don't know about, but I want to ask you, how many, do you have any idea, just a rough guesstimate, of how many pastors in the United States do you know who are teaching Romans 13 correctly?
Oh, wow.
See, this is going to give our listening audience an understanding of the severity of the problem if you are right. And I'm going to tell the listening audience he's going to be right no matter what he says.
I know of at least one, Chuck Baldwin, up in Montana.
Okay.
He wrote a book called Romans 13.
Okay.
And it has some great principles in it. Now, one thing when you mention someone, you know, he was the constitutional candidate and he ran for president, I think, twice.
Okay.
And what is the tendency of maybe other pastors that are not on the same page, or doesn't have to be pastors, anybody,
mm-hmm.
would say, okay, you're aligning yourself with Chuck Baldwin. And then they'll go to a theological issue
sure.
that he may be off on or that I might not agree with
sure.
him and try to discredit. But we're talking about a particular issue here. And
sure.
this issue, I think he's correct. I think he's got it right. And I'm trying to think of other pastors that would be on board.
Yeah.
Most of them, I think, just they just kind of gloss over it. They don't understand how important this issue is, especially in the time in which we live. And I've talked to three or four different publishers about this book, and every one of them, Jim, said the same thing. They said, this is very timely.
Oh, yeah.
You're addressing an issue that people desperately need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this is, to answer your question about the pastors, I know of that one. Now, I'm in somewhat trepidation after I wrote this manuscript
mm-hmm.
because when I send it to people like yourself,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought, well, I'm just going to have to be willing to have him be on the other side of the other side on this issue. I thought that that you might. I knew you would be objective. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what you were going to say. I sent it also to Pastor John Eichmann up in Washington State, and I wanted. I've sent it to a few pastors just to kind of get their take on it. Mm-hmm. And he had the same opinion of it as you do. He said, you need to get this out, and the faster the better. So there aren't many that are addressing it when it comes to going to Romans 13 and having the right take on it. Exceedingly few have what I consider the right take on it. But when you an issue that is this important, you just can't gloss over. And that's what I, well, you read my section on Romans 13, taking it, actually exegeting it. And there are so many quotes of people who used to have it right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just in our day and age that this standing up for freedom and having the right interpretation of Romans 13 is no longer in fashion, is no longer in vogue. I mean, it's just, it essentially disappeared. And that's what's so encouraging is the quotes in this book from people who come before us. And even starting with the, the Black Regiment, the pastors back then, they used to publish their sermons, and they're still available today. Of course, they have dust on them. Nobody's interested in them. But from then on, even to now, there have been people who have stood up and said, look, this is what God has to say in his word about freedom and what our relationship to the government is. And I can assure you that we are not responsible, that God does not hold us accountable to submit unconditionally to our government. And that's the word that is not going out. In today's climate, a pastor that even mentions anything about this starts getting rebuked and saying you're being too political, and they have no idea of history. They have no idea about the Bible. They just think, well, they buy into the idea of separation of church and state, and you're going into an area you have no business. That's how far it slipped.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I've got about three comments to make that if I could remember what they were. But the first one would be for people who tell us that, from any one of my congregation would tell me, you're getting too political about this. I wonder, just curiously, I wonder what our mentor, and I'm maybe I shouldn't say that about you, but I think that's right. What would my mentor, Bob Thiem, say if someone said to him, sir, you're teaching Romans 13 in a different way, in a way different than I would think it ought to be taught. And, sir, I think you're getting too political. I wonder what the colonel would say about that.
That would be a brave soul.
Oh, absolutely. It would be like, if you don't find the door real quick, I'm going to make one for you, and it'll be with you, you know.
Well, the reason that someone would even make a comment like that is because they haven't been taught the truth to begin with.
Absolutely.
And they have succumbed to the propaganda. They succumbed to the brainwashing. They're certainly not expressing anything that is biblical, but they think they are. They're like so many adolescent believers who, and this I think is a hazard of being a believer, that is an adolescent, and that is that they have a little doctrine and they think they have a lot.
Oh, yes.
And so someone that would make a comment like that is just, they don't know that they're revealing their ignorance. And, you know, we have to have patience. I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it just, first thing that happens to me is I have to put a lid on the anger in my own self. At such a comment.
Sure.
But what it is it's just that they're in darkness. They haven't been enlightened.
Absolutely.
They believe the lie, and what they need is the truth. And there's just not many out there giving it. And that's what this book is about. about. It's not just about a person's relationship with their government. It's more attuned to a Christian's relationship with their government.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And where they go so often is if they know anything, Romans 13, got to obey, and
yeah,
that's the
mm-hmm.
end of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike, I think that another thought here, too, is that it is my contention that Satan, all the way back to the Garden of Eden, I don't think he's whispering in our ear right now. I don't think I don't think he has direct contact with us at this point in time. I believe he's very real. But as far as he's concerned, I think even he, at this point in time, doesn't mind if a Christian gets the truth, as long as they don't see how it applies. And that's why I believe that maybe even within our own the doctrinal movement, as we understood in the past, we can exegete that passage. But if we don't see how and where it applies, and in fact make the application, the people in our own pews are not getting what they need. They need to see how it applies.
I think that's part of being a good pastor,
mm-hmm.
is not only giving the truth, giving the scriptures,
yeah.
but helping them to apply it by giving illustrations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I learned early on, I was in First and Second Samuel. I called it the David series.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I gave a lesson that was accurate, and I think I gave it with enthusiasm and exuberance.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, I thought, something is missing here, and I couldn't put my finger on it for a while, and then I guess the Lord just revealed it to me. He just kind of enlightened me somehow.
Sure.
He didn't say anything, but I understood that I didn't tell him how to apply it. What does this mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
What is the relevancy
Absolutely.
Of this in your life?
But
if you don't do that, then, they've got some facts, they have some information, but what good is it if you don't make it relevant and show them how to make it applicable in their own life?
Have you ever had anything like this happen to you in all these years of your ministry? I had had a man who came to my church on a particular Sunday morning. He'd heard about our ministry here, and he drove somewhere between 30 and 40 miles one way to get here. And this would have been, back in the 70s. And I went to the back of the church to meet him before he left, and he said, Pastor, he said, I drove somewhere 30 to 40 miles to get here. He said, I will never be back. And I thought, good grief, what did I say already today that would have ticked him off that bad? And I said, well, what's the problem, sir? He said, if I wanted to hear Bob Thiem, he said, I stayed home and listened to a tape and went out to drive that 40 miles. So that's sort of where I'm coming from as far as my mentorship is concerned, because I believe the man was accurate in so many, many, many areas. I don't want to deviate from that, see? But and yet that turns a lot of people off when they're getting the truth.
Well, he was, I wouldn't hesitate to say that he was my spiritual mentor as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I had tremendous respect and regard for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he did not corner the market on truth.
Hmm.
And he had a particular perspective that he would come at certain verses with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have so many different pastors, is because, at least one reason,
mm-hmm.
is because we get from one passage, you could get six different pastors and they could all teach the truth and they all would be different because mm-hmm. they're coming at it from a different perspective.
Absolutely.
And there were some things I'm sure that you've been at this place as well as I have, that I have exegeted verses, and I see things where he was just on the wrong side. He was just wrong.
I understand.
But he was human. I mean, and I don't know if the information that I have that he changed it later.
Mm-hmm.
But you just can't make someone an icon and think that they have the final word on everything. And that's not to disparage or besmirch his reputation at all.
No, as a matter of fact, Mike, I've lost a lot of what would have been considered early on. I've lost a lot of friends because just over the idea that when the colonel taught 10 problem solving devices, I added one. You know, and I'm telling you, I lost a lot of friends and lost a lot of credibility with a lot of people simply because I did that. And yet I come back now and I teach 10 problem-solving devices, but it's a little differently than what it was taught by him. But I agree 100%. This was my mentor, my spiritual mentor. I wouldn't be smirching him at all, and yet he had no corner on the truth.
It's not his fault that people would put him up on a pedestal and make an icon. It's not his fault.
That's exactly
right. In
fact,
he taught iconoclastic arrogance that people should have learned and applied,
right.
But so many of them just ignored that and put him on a pedestal anyway.
Yeah, sure enough.
So,
well, let's go on and talk about the taxes. You know what it was like 100 years ago.
Okay. Well, I have a list there of some of the taxes that did not exist 100 years ago, and there was no sales tax, there was no income tax, there was no property tax, no inheritance tax.
Mm-hmm.
There was no capital gains tax. There was no Social Security tax. And there's many more that I have that, if you want to hear some more of them, there was no luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
There was no unemployment taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to have essentially is a tax or a fee for getting a hunting license, a fishing license.
Yeah.
A driving license. Today, you have to have, I guess, what is essentially a fee or a tax to get a building permit. You have to have a lot of people who live in the country have a septic permit tax, a well permit tax, a watercraft registration tax, workman's compensation tax. There's toll roads, a toll road tax. We also have taxes for tobacco and gasoline and a liquor tax and when you name and that's just the ones that I'm thinking about off the top of my head.
Sure.
There was just recently I read something from Ann Coulter, which is a political analyst, and she said she was on the Blaze, and she said that the American people today pay somewhere in the vicinity of 60% of their income in taxes, and that's a pretty big chunk.
Oh yeah,
what do we? Every year they tell us how many when we finally have paid the taxes and can start keeping the money that we make. What is it, 5 or 6?
It goes up some around June or July.
Yeah. That you work that long just to pay the taxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's happened is that women used to, mothers, wives used to stay at home and were homemakers, and they could have a real home to come home to for the children and their husbands. And I know that, that of course, feminism had part to do with that changing, but another factor was the taxes, because in today's climate, so many families have to have the wife working as well as the husband. The husband goes out and essentially provides enough funds to for the family to survive, and the wife works just to pay the taxes.
Yes.
Just to think what that does to the home front. I mean, when I was a boy growing up, I cannot remember coming home from school when my mother was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have a little snack for me, and she would ask me about my day and what went on. I looked forward to that. I couldn't wait to get home and tell her about what happened and have some time with her. That's foreign today. That, for most homes, that does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cohesiveness and the closeness of the family has, well, it's like the movie, it's Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Families used to eat together. They used to really know each other and be involved and interact in one another's lives. Today, for the most part, they're strangers.
Yes.
They're out. The children go to, are out at school and all the extracurricular activities. The father's away trying to make a living. The wife is out so often trying to. She has a job as well just to pay the taxes. What I'm saying is these taxes, the tax is a very serious issue. There's probably been, well, the wars, even in this country, had a great deal to do with taxes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The first war of independence, what they call a revolutionary war, certainly did. The Civil War had to do with taxes. So when we're talking about these taxes, it's not just a peripheral issue. It's not just something that is inconsequential. We're mm-hmm. talking about a huge issue.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I have a quote from John Eidsmo. You had him on your show one
yes,
time,
sir.
Didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says, taking all the taxes together, federal, state, and local, the average citizen pays approximately 42% of his income in taxes. That means for the first 5 months of every year, he works not for himself, but for the government.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And this isn't talking about all the incidental taxes.
Sure.
We don't have much time, but when we're talking about taxes, I want to at least mention the most insidious tax of them all, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, do it.
It's a hidden tax. It's not even called a tax, but essentially that's what it is, and it's inflation.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people don't understand inflation because the media, for the most part, mm-hmm. tries to put the blame for inflation elsewhere. But the one that is responsible for inflation is right on the back of government, because what inflation comes about when the government prints more money.
Mm-hmm.
And of course today they don't, I know they still print money, but usually today it's just an electronic entry in mm-hmm. and this goes towards the Federal Reserve, which isn't federal, they have no reserves, but, when that happens, every dollar that you have in your wallet, every dollar that's in your, savings account
mm-hmm.
is diminished.
Diminished. That's exactly right.
And in other words, it's in a sense, it's no different than them just coming in and taxing you or reaching into your wallet
mm-hmm.
and stealing money, because your money is worth less and it won't buy as much. And I think that, just look at a house. In the book I say, well, it was just up on one of the points I was making. In 1910, an average house cost around $5,000.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Now, why is it? What does it say? $150,000, or I don't know, something like that, for an average home. Why is that? What happened? Well, it's because the government has continued to print more and more money,
mm-hmm.
which makes our money less. And see, that way, to be able to promote their socialistic program.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to go directly to the taxpayer to get the funds. All they have to do is just print, get the printing presses printing out more money, which makes it available to them. They get it first, and then the result is the price on everything goes up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not called a tax, but wouldn't you agree that it acts just like a tax?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Mike, when I first went to the Philippines in 1985, the exchange rate was 18 pesos for a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 40 pesos to the dollar. So
mm-hmm.
inflation there, what it would cost them 18 pesos, if something was worth a dollar, they would pay 18 pesos. But today, they're paying 40 pesos for the same thing.
And this is one reason people don't understand the desperate situation that we're heading
for,
are already there, is that we are so much in debt, we don't even really touch the national debt. But all we're struggling to do now is just pay the interest on the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to borrow, it hasn't come to this point yet, but I think we're quickly arriving to it, is that when we can no longer borrow money from anyone,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the only other alternative then, other than to default, is to just crank out more money.
Just pay it off
with dollars that are less valuable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when that happens, then you get into serious inflation. That's what happened to Germany. Germany did that, and the wives and would go to the market as early as they could in the morning. There was lines that would develop early in the morning because by noon the prices would already be higher.
And listen, Mike, I tell my wife, I will sort of laugh and tell my wife, it'll be at 6:30 in the morning. I said, honey, your car needs gas. I'm going to go get it before the price goes up.
Right?
Yeah. I'm telling you, I've seen it. Listen, just this past week, it went up 7 cents in one day. I went by the gas station. It was one price. I came back by the gas station, and it was 7 cents, 7 cents more.
Well, that is the tax that people don't, they're not educated to understand what inflation is, and the media is on the wrong side of the truth in trying to explain what it is, but that is what it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's instead of cutting government programs, instead of even having a chance of balancing the budget, mm-hmm. which is, you remember when Phil Graham from Texas put forth the bill to balance the budget? Do you remember that?
I do, sir.
And what happened was that was good for that Congress, but when the next one Congress came in, they didn't feel like they were bound by it, and here we go, we're right back forgetting
mm-hmm.
about trying to balance the budget.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
But that's the most insidious tax, and you go to the grocery store, and you think every time something goes up just overnight, sometimes, I mean by a large amount, you think, what happened? What caused this? Well, sometimes it can be, maybe if you're buying oranges and there was mm-hmm. a blight on oranges in Florida and California, there are those issues. But most of the time, it's just inflation. And when you throw in government regulation on these companies
mm-hmm.
That they have to comply with, which are changing all the time,
mm-hmm.
and that has a factor involved in it as well. But for the most part, it's just the government creating more money in order to fund their agenda that means that our buying power is less.
You know, and what happens is when inflation takes place, it's not only, you're not only paying a higher price for bananas, you're paying a high price for gas, you're paying a higher tax for the tires you put on the car, you're paying more for your dental work, you're paying more for at the hospital, it affects everything. So something goes up 2 cents over here, you're not just paying that 2 cents tax, you go out and buy something else that's going on out there too.
Yeah, and it's a de-incentive to save, because why should people be motivated to save over a period of years,
yeah.
when, say, you're going to save and try to buy a home or something,
mm-hmm.
in 10
mm-hmm.
years you should have enough. 10 years from now, you're not going to have enough, because that house might be double of what the price is that it was 10 years earlier.
Mike, let me give you an example of that. I bought a house in 1975. I bought a house in Little Rock for $33,000. It was a three-bedroom house, two bathrooms. It was a nice-size house. And my mother looked at me and said, Jim, $33,000, how do you think you're going to pay for that? 25 years later, I sold it to my son for $90,000.
All right, yeah.
And he wouldn't, and that was the going price, okay? $90,000 was the going price. So inflation that much over that period of time.
I bought a home, and I think it was in 1979, four-bedroom, two-bath, wonderful house, and it was $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That was the price of the home.
Sure.
I had it 7.5 years,
mm-hmm.
and I sold it for $57,000.
Yep.
And, again, what happened? Well, it's that inflation.
Yes. That's
if someone was, over that 7.5 years, was trying to save enough to buy that $20,000 home.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would happen? That's a cruel trick that is just imposed on.
And see, we're not talking about having made money, because when I sold that house to my son, I had to go out and buy another one.
Yeah.
And the one I bought was for like $113,000, which sold for about, $40,000 25 years ago.
Well, I think most people are, it's a good thing to save money for a rainy day and for things mm-hmm. that you want to have. Mm-hmm. But the money that we have right now in savings, if those that are fortunate enough to have any,
mm-hmm.
is worth more right now, today, than it's ever going to be, as far as we can tell.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so why save it? Why not buy it? Purchase things now that you have the greatest purchasing power with that money now than you will a year, mm-hmm. 5 years, 10 years down the road.
Well, look, pal, we've reached that 10 o'clock time, and since this is my program, and it's we can run it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, we could go on, but I'm going to go ahead and choose to stop again right now. I tell people, if the Holy Spirit can lead us to start on time, He can lead us to stop on time. So from that standpoint, we're out of time now, Mike, and I really appreciate this, and I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask us to go to Romans chapter 13. My concern is, I think the rapture may occur before we get there.
That could be. That's fine. We'll plan on going there.
And then we'll come back and pick up some of this stuff later, okay?
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, why don't you pray for us as we go, okay?
Okay. Heavenly Father, we are discussing issues that we as Christians, all of us have these issues to face, plus many more that have to do with health, have to do with family matters. We're so thankful that we can go to you and just take all of our cares and burdens and put them on you and then leave them there. You are the God of grace, the God of mercy. We live in a nation that seems to be falling apart, and yet we don't despair because we know that you are in control of all things. But our main desire is to do what's pleasing in your sight.
Mm-hmm.
And our relationship with our government is a major issue. And we pray that the things that we learn from this program will help us to have the proper attitude, the proper relationship with our government that will be pleasing in your sight. And we just pray that we all will continue to look to you for guidance and that have that optimism, because we recognize Jesus Christ is coming back,
mm-hmm.
and He's going to set it all straight. So we just thank you for this time that we've had to look at these issues, and we pray it in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Mike, in closing, if I just want to say in Christian love, brother, I love you, pal. Love you, buddy.
I love you also, and just thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be on your show.
Yeah, well, maybe after we go off the air and sometime the next day or so, I'll get in touch with you, because I got some other ideas for the future, pal, once we get through this, if Jesus tarries.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Folks, we've just closed down the program with Mike, and there's about a 30-second delay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave the... I leave the video on, and what I will do is shut down my microphone, and then in about 30 seconds, I'll just go ahead and close the video, okay? God bless all of you, and thank you for being with me today. Bye-bye.